Welcome to Talk Nation Radio, a half-hour discussion on politics, human rights, and the environment. I'm Dory Smith.
The Pakistani army has already signaled, if we do get to a level of hostilities between Pakistan and India, Pakistan will move its soldiers from the western border with Afghanistan to the eastern border with India. That would be catastrophic for U.S. troops in Afghanistan and for NATO forces in Afghanistan.
Journalist Graham Usher joins us from Islamabad, Pakistan, to discuss the climate there in the wake of the deaths of 171 people murdered at various locations in Mumbai, India, in the financial and tourist district there in late November. Graham Usher's article in Al Ahram, titled Cold War, raises the question, will American mediation ease or deepen the crisis in Pakistan-India relations caused by the killings in Mumbai? Graham Usher is author of a report in Middle East Report, Marip.org, titled Pakistan Amidst the Storms. We've been fortunate to be able to receive breaking news and analysis from Graham Usher in the past on topics like the assassination of Benazir Bhutto in 2007, the Marriott Hotel bombing in October of 2008, and ongoing U.S. military operations at the Northwest border region in 2008. And you can listen to those programs online at archive.org, and we'll post a link to all of them at our webpage, talknationradio.org. Graham Usher, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me.
How would you describe the scale of U.S. involvement in mediation between Pakistani and Indian officials over the Mumbai killings?
Well, I think it was pretty extensive. We had Condoleezza Rice flying to both India and Pakistan last week. And I think the priority of that intervention was really to diffuse tensions between the two countries. Obviously, the danger of escalation between Pakistan and India was visible to all. You have two countries that are nuclear armed and both led by relatively weak governments. The civilian government in Pakistan does not really control the foreign policy or the strategic policy of Pakistan. That is still very much in the hands of the Pakistani army. And India, although it is a civilian democracy, it is in transition to elections, if you like, was between governments. So you had a situation of extreme fragility. You also had very clear allegations coming out of India that there were Pakistani links to the attacks in Mumbai. They have now been firmed up to demonstrate pretty much irrefutably that the group that carried out the killings in Mumbai was Lashkar-e-Taiba, which is a Pakistani-based group. And for all of those reasons, the Americans came in, were seen as the mediators. And I think basically Rice's trip did succeed in diffusing tension, because on the basis of it, the Pakistani government and the army has started to move against Lashkar-e-Taiba in the last few days. We have now had one of their bases commandeered by the Pakistani army in Pakistan-controlled Kashmir. Its military commander, Zaki Rahman Lakhvi, who the Indians allege was the mastermind behind the attacks on Mumbai, we understand is now under arrest. And there has been a number of closures and raids on offices that belong to the Jamaat-e-Dawah, which, as I said, is a civilian front organization for Lashkar-e-Taiba, throughout Pakistan. I'm not sure if those actions will be deemed enough by India, but certainly they are one of the actions that India demanded last week that Pakistan take. Pakistan has now taken that under pressure from the Americans to some extent. So I think we can say that the American intervention has been very important and has so far served to diffuse the tensions between two countries. It is extremely dangerous if they reach any level of hostilities because they are both nuclear armed nations.
Now, there is a dispute over who is going to interrogate the various people arrested in the Mumbai killings. But there was one person arrested in India, charged in the killings immediately at the event. And I wonder, do you find him credible? And is most of this intelligence coming from his confessions? And what could that arrest and the situation of who this guy is do to the political situation in Pakistan?
Well, the information is not all coming from the arrested gunman. I think much of it came from there, but the Indian intelligence agencies say that they have other evidence, such as telephone calls between the gunman and Lashkar-e-Taiba camp in Pakistan-administered Kashmir. They have circumstantial evidence, the so-called chatter that was picked up, and they have presented this evidence to the Americans. They have presented it to the British, and both the Americans, well, in the words of Condoleezza Rice, she regards the evidence as pretty irrefutable. Now, she has been clear to say that she does not see any evidence implicating the Pakistani army, government, or intelligence services in the attack on Mumbai. But it is pretty clear that the attack had links with Pakistan, in as much as the gunmen were trained in Lashkar-e-Taiba camp and set out on their mission from Pakistan. That now, I think, has been accepted by the Pakistani government. I say that because the Pakistani government is now acting against Lashkar-e-Taiba camp. It is arresting people that the Americans and India demand that it arrest. So I think, while I agree, it is extremely dangerous simply to act on evidence that is extracted by a single suspect under interrogation, it does seem that there is other evidence substantiating the Indian claim that the Pakistani government now implicitly accepts.
What about LT or LET, this Lashkar-e-Taiba group? Can you explain more about the history of its members? Talk about what they want for Kashmir.
Well, basically, Lashkar-e-Taiba was set up in 1989, basically to serve as a proxy for Pakistan's regional wars and regional ambitions in Afghanistan and in Indian-administered Kashmir. What it wants, it's a very hardline jihadist organization inspired by both the Wahhabi school of Islam and also to some extent by the Al-Qaeda school of global jihad. Essentially what it wants is what it calls a pure Islamic state, not only in Pakistan and Kashmir, but throughout South Asia as a first step, including calling for the liberation of the 150 million Muslims that exist in India. Its leader, Hafez Saeed, was famously quoted in 2001 as saying that he believed in Samuel Huntington's clash of civilizations theory. His only difference is that he believed that Islam was the superior civilization and that it would eventually dominate all other religions or views or worldviews. So it is an extremely hardline jihadist group, and it has had historically very close links with the Pakistan Intelligence Services, the ISI. As I said, in the 1990s, this relationship was overt. The ISI used it as a proxy for fighting against India in Indian-administered Kashmir. In 1999, when the Pakistani army went into Kargil inside Indian Kashmir, Lashkar-e-Taiba guerrillas fought alongside Pakistani soldiers. And in 1999, Hafez Saeed, the leader of Lashkar-e-Taiba, welcomed the coup by President General Musharraf because he said it was better for a military dictatorship to run in Pakistan than for the corruption that would be spread by Western democracy. So there are close relations between Lashkar-e-Taiba and the military. After 9/11 and following the policy turn by the army and the government, severing links, at least officially, between the government and the Taliban and pursuing Al-Qaeda suspects, Lashkar-e-Taiba was banned. It wasn't banned directly as a result of 9/11, but it was banned because India blamed Lashkar-e-Taiba for an attack on the Indian parliament in Delhi in December 2001. Following that attack, Pervez Musharraf, who by this time was the military ruler of Pakistan, he banned Lashkar-e-Taiba and said that he would no longer allow any group to conduct terrorism in the name of liberating Kashmir. However, the policy of using Lashkar-e-Taiba as a proxy in the war in Kashmir still continued. Its camp basically still operated in Pakistan-controlled Kashmir. A number of its fighters were demobilized, but they were redeployed through the Jamaat-e-Dawa civilian organization, which was always seen basically as a front for Lashkar-e-Taiba, as simply a way for it to change its name and so avoid the strictures of being banned. Although the level of tension between India and Pakistan over Kashmir has reduced dramatically in the last 4 years as a result of the Indian-Pakistan peace process, there is still a proxy war, if you like, being fought. In the last year, for example, there has been increased infiltration by Lashkar-e-Taiba fighters across from Pakistan Kashmir into Indian Kashmir. And this is seen here largely as a tit-for-tat response by the Pakistani army for what it sees as Indian meddling in Afghanistan and on the borders between Pakistan and Afghanistan. So I think most people here, most analysts here, would say that Lashkar-e-Taiba is still being used by the army, that the army still sees it as one of its proxies, and it still sees it as a strategy for bleeding India in order to wrest concessions in Indian-administered Kashmir.
Graham Usher, you also write about the political climate between all three nations. Pakistan's President Asif Ali Zardari and Prime Minister Yusuf Raza Jilani have been dealing with the Bush administration, specifically Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice, and may have developed a rapport, at least with her. But how might all of this be impacted by the fact that soon these leaders will be dealing with President Barack Obama and his appointee, Secretary of State Hillary Clinton?
Well, I think it's a very good question. It's certainly true that Asif Ali Zardari has presented himself, as he says in his own phrase, as America's friend. He is probably the most overtly pro-American president Pakistan has ever seen, which is a problem in Pakistan because 64% of Pakistanis, according to opinion polls, see the United States as the greatest threat to Pakistan's security, a far greater threat than, say, Al-Qaeda or the Taliban. There is widespread opposition in Pakistan across all classes towards American foreign policy, especially in Afghanistan, but not only in Afghanistan, also in Iraq and also towards Palestine. So it is not a popular move by Zardari to present himself as so much America's man. But he has done so because America helped him become the president of Pakistan. And I think also Zardari sees America as a kind of insurance and protection against the Pakistani army. And as you know, the Pakistani army has an enormous political influence in Pakistan. For over half of Pakistan's 60 or so years, it has been the army that has ruled the country. And even for those years where there were supposedly civilian governments, it was always understood that certain areas of foreign policy, such as Afghanistan, nuclear weapons, India, Kashmir, fell very much under the control of the Pakistani army. That is still the case today. And I think Zardari basically sees if he's going to try and shift that policy, he needs the backing of the Americans. I think he looks forward, hopefully, but also with a degree of dread, about the new administration of Barack Obama. He hopes that it will act on certain of the pledges it's made, one of which, of course, which is very important to Pakistanis, there is a renewed push to resolve the conflict in Kashmir between Pakistan and India, because this is seen as the source of so many of the tensions between Pakistan and India. It is, for example, one of the reasons the Pakistani army still sponsors groups like Lashkar-e-Taiba, because it believes this is the only way to force India to the negotiation table so that a permanent resolution of the Kashmir dispute can be had. So I think on that level, there is a hope that Barack Obama will push for some kind of resolution of the dispute between India and Pakistan and the Kashmiri people. There is also hope, at least by Zardari, that he will pledge himself, Barack Obama, to a civilian form of government and a democratic form of government. Historically, American administrations have always felt much more comfortable with military dictatorships in Pakistan than any kind of civilian democracy. But there is also apprehension. There is real apprehension that Barack Obama, for example, will continue the current American policy of unilateral military strikes in the border regions between Pakistan and Afghanistan. These are not only opposed by the Pakistani army, they are opposed by the Pakistani government, and they are seen as utterly counterproductive to its current policy of trying to combat the Taliban and Al-Qaeda on the Pakistan-Afghan border. It undermines this because it makes it look like Pakistan is fighting America's war. And I think the view of both the Pakistani government and even elements of the Pakistani army leadership believes that it can only be successful in combating the Taliban if it is seen as Pakistan's conflict, not an American conflict. So I think there is apprehension about the new American administration, but one thing is for sure, Zardari and the new Pakistani government will bend over backwards to do everything that America wants, because it does see America as absolutely crucial to its own survival, not only in the fight against the Taliban, not only in the tensions with India, but basically in the economic situation. The Pakistani economy is very near bankrupt at the moment. It is completely dependent on institutions like the IMF and World Bank to bail it out in the next year or so. And of course, if you're dependent on the World Bank and IMF, that means indirectly you are very dependent on the American administration. So as far as Asif Ali Zardari is concerned, he has to have a positive relationship with the American administration, no matter whether it's Democrat or Republican. But I think there is apprehension by him. In terms of the army, I think, is currently in one of its lowest relations with the American administration because it sees the American administration of Bush, and even more so perhaps the incoming administration of Barack Obama, as very much in the control of the Indian lobby. It sees that the Americans are currently pursuing a policy in Afghanistan that seems to be very much guided to Indian interests rather than Pakistani interests. And it sees the United States as basically more and more hostile to Pakistani interests in Afghanistan. And the manifestation of that is, for example, the drone attacks. The Pakistani army has repeatedly said it's opposed to these drone attacks, and the Americans have simply escalated them, including in the last week or so. The relations between the Pakistani army and the United States administration, the current one and the future one, at the moment are very, very cold. It remains to be seen whether they will warm up when Barack Obama becomes president.
We're speaking with journalist Graham Usher. He's based in Islamabad, Pakistan, where he writes for the weekly newspaper Al Ahram. Graham Usher also writes for U.S. publications, including Middle East Report, Marip.org, and The Nation magazine. Graham Usher, in your December piece after the Mumbai killings, you quoted a retired general, a former head of Pakistan's ISI, Asad Durrani, and he denied that the Pakistani army sees India as the primary threat today. Well, even if that's true, we seem to be facing the potential risk that the eastern border region becomes another front in the war America is waging in Afghanistan that the administration is talking about escalating.
I think the whole intervention by the United States and Condoleezza Rice is to prevent that from happening. The last thing the Americans want is any tension on the eastern border between Pakistan and India. And for one very simple reason, which the Pakistani army has already signaled, and that is if we do get to a level of hostilities between Pakistan and India, Pakistan will move its soldiers from the western border with Afghanistan to the eastern border with India. That would be catastrophic for U.S. troops in Afghanistan and for NATO forces in Afghanistan. Whatever criticism the Americans have of the Pakistani counterinsurgency policies on the border between Afghanistan and Pakistan, they still remain absolutely indispensable to the fight against the Taliban in Afghanistan. I'll give you just one statistic. 75% of all NATO supplies, some 300 trucks every day in terms of ammunition, equipment, materiel, enters Afghanistan through Pakistan. If the Pakistani army lifted protection on that, those routes could not happen, and the troops would be very quickly bereft of equipment and essential supplies. So the importance of the Pakistani army continuing its presence on the western border, and at the moment it has something like 100,000 troops there, is absolutely essential to America's counterinsurgency policy in Afghanistan. So the absolute priority of Condoleezza Rice and of any American president is to prevent hostilities between India and Pakistan in order to make sure that Pakistani soldiers are continuing fighting against the Taliban on the western border. So I think there will be no attempt by America, certainly, for the eastern border to be caught up. For the Pakistan army, it will very much depend on what India does. Now, if India were to engage in a kind of an American-like unilateral strike on, say, a Lashkar-e-Taiba camp on the eastern border or in Pakistan, Kashmir, then almost certainly the army would mobilize from the western border to the eastern border. That, I think, is one of the reasons why they have gone after Lashkar-e-Taiba camp in Pakistan, Kashmir now. It is almost like a preemptive move to prevent India engaging in any military strike. But I think in terms of American policy, they will do everything they possibly can to prevent any hostility between India and Pakistan. But they will also pressurize Pakistan to act against Lashkar-e-Taiba on the basis of evidence that India presents that Lashkar-e-Taiba was involved in some way in the attacks in Mumbai.
You've also put together some frightening scenarios. In one of your reports, you discussed the potential for a kind of Cold War to develop now between Pakistan and India, saying there could be a return to tensions existing in 2001. And at that time, a similar, though smaller, gun and grenade attack on the Indian Parliament in Delhi led to a 10-month-long standoff on the Pakistan-India border. Have you become any more hopeful that there will be a lessening of tensions instead, you know, even during the hours since you've put these first stories together?
Well, I wouldn't say I was more hopeful. I wrote two pieces last week for Al-Ahram, and in the second piece, I made it clear what I thought were the three scenarios emerging out of the crisis. The first scenario was like we saw in 2002, which would be a mobilization of the armies on the eastern border, and that, of course, would be a recipe for potential war. That would be the worst-case scenario. The other second scenario was that India would launch a unilateral military strike against a Lashkar-e-Taiba camp inside Pakistan. I think, to some extent, that has been preempted by the Pakistani army action, and I think that has happened as a result of American pressure, basically saying to Pakistan, on the one hand, that you have to act, but also saying to India, on the other hand, to lay off and not escalate tensions and allow Pakistan to act in its own way. But the third scenario I sketched is the one I think is the most likeliest, and it's the one I said was the most likeliest in the piece, and that is that basically the peace process between Pakistan and India, the tentative moves between reconciliation that we've seen between India and Pakistan over the last 4 years will go into cold storage. All connections will be severed, and we will be back in a kind of Cold War situation between Pakistan and India. And that, of course, is always very dangerous, because if it's a Cold War, it can easily turn into a hot war, as we've seen in the last couple of weeks. I wouldn't say I was more hopeful, but I think what we've seen in the last couple of days suggests that it's the third scenario, that they're sort of putting the peace process into deep freeze, that is probably going to be the likeliest scenario. I basically feel the one area where I think Barack Obama is completely right is that there can't be any resolution of Afghanistan or of the crisis in Pakistan without a resolution of the crisis between Pakistan and India. And that can only be resolved on the basis of a resolution of the Kashmiri dispute. How it is resolved, we will have to see. But it remains the running sore between Pakistan and India, and it is the reason there is hostilities. One of the reasons that Pakistan is so suspicious of Indian activities in Afghanistan is that it believes that it is forming an alliance with the Afghan government, with the Americans, against Pakistan. And when you ask the Pakistani army, why do you have this sense of paranoia, they answer then, well, why doesn't India want to resolve the Kashmiri dispute? You have to understand that from the Pakistani military's point of view, they are in charge of a very precarious country. Its border with Afghanistan is not recognized by the Afghan government, and its border with India is in dispute because Kashmir has not been resolved. So it feels itself very much under threat. And one way of reassuring it that it is not under threat is to resolve the Kashmiri dispute. So I think Barack Obama is completely right when he points to that, when he says that Pakistan will only see forces like Al-Qaeda and the Taliban as a primary threat and not view India as the primary threat when some kind of resolution of Kashmir is done. So I think in that sense I'm pessimistic, because I think this flare-up between India and Pakistan has made India even more hard against any attempt to resolve the Kashmiri dispute. It will simply say to Barack Obama that we refuse the linkage between Afghanistan and Kashmir. And I think that means that we will continue to see what we have seen for the last 60 or 70 years, either the potentiality of war between India and Pakistan or ongoing proxy wars between India and Pakistan, fought in Kashmir mostly, but also in Afghanistan. In many ways, I think this latest crisis has deepened my pessimism vis-a-vis peace between Pakistan and India, even though probably the prospect of a hot war has subsided. But a cold war basically is not good to any of the peoples in the region. You have over a third of the world's poor, desperately poor, living in India and Pakistan. It is an obscenity that such countries with such problems of poverty are spending such money on nuclear weapons. And the only way they can really develop their peoples in a socially useful way is if they end the arms race. And the only way they're going to end the arms race is if they end the conflict between them. And the source of the conflict between Pakistan and India is Kashmir.
Graham Usher, you've written about the CIA and its involvement in missile strikes against the Taliban and Al-Qaeda. What about CIA policy and how that fits in with what you're writing about here, where you say the Army sees both the Bush and future Obama administrations as hostages to the pro-India lobby?
It appears that the CIA are very much the force within the American administration pushing for drone attacks in Pakistan. They give basically a reason for this. They say the drone attacks are increasingly successful. They are killing a number of senior Al-Qaeda commanders. And they are also putting Al-Qaeda commanders on the run. And while they're on the run and in hiding from the missile strikes, they're not planning attacks not only in Afghanistan, but they're not planning attacks in Europe and the United States. So they would justify it. The Pakistani view, however, is that the attacks undermine their own counterinsurgency operations against the Taliban. They undermine it because they increase anti-Americanism in Pakistan, and they make the government look helpless. And if the government is made to look helpless, then the Taliban is seen as the defender of the country, if you like. If the Taliban is fighting the Americans, and the Americans is striking in Pakistan, then they acquire a kind of patriotic allure or aura, which of course boosts their popular support. So there are two views. But I think there is also another view, and that is that the CIA no longer trusts the Pakistan intelligence agency, the ISI. It doesn't share intelligence with it, because it fears that any intelligence it shares with it will be passed on to the Afghan Taliban. So there is a real crisis of relations, and that's another reason America has adopted unilateral strikes. And I think there is a third reason, and that is they believe that if they do these strikes, they are basically signaling to the Pakistani army that either you go after Al-Qaeda and the Taliban targets with greater vigor, or we will do it for you, in the hope that this will pressurize the Pakistani army to take further and more action. My own view is that policy is completely counterproductive. The Pakistani army is not going to go after groups such as the Afghan Taliban that are not hostile to Pakistan. It will go after groups like the Al-Qaeda and the Pakistan Taliban that is seen as hostile to Pakistan, but it will not go after groups like the Afghan Taliban because basically it views the current Afghan government as hostile to Pakistan and very much under the influence of India. And that is why I think the solution to that lack of trust is a regional dispensation to try and solve the conflict in Afghanistan. And again, I think Barack Obama is right when he says that the only solution for Afghanistan ultimately is a regional solution. But that solution must include not simply the Afghan government and India, but also Pakistan, also Iran, and also the Afghan Taliban, because there will not be peace in Afghanistan unless and until the Afghan Taliban is included as a legitimate interlocutor in the conflict. That is the Pakistan government's position. That is not yet the position of the United States, nor is it yet the position of Barack Obama. And until that is the position, I think Pakistan will continue to quietly support the Afghan Taliban because it sees it as a force that represents Pashtun interests in Afghanistan, but fundamentally is a force that is not seen as hostile to Pakistan, as opposed to the current Karzai government and the Indians and the Iranians and the Russians, all of which have influence with the Afghan government, all of which in the eyes of Pakistan are hostile to what Pakistan sees as its legitimate interest in Afghanistan.
Graham Usher, thank you so much again for this breaking news and analysis.
You're welcome.
Graham Usher joined us from Islamabad, Pakistan, where he writes for Al-Ahram Weekly. You can also find his work online at marip.org, Middle East Report Online. For Talk Nation Radio, I'm Dori Smith. This program produced at the studios of WHUS at the University of Connecticut in Storrs, Connecticut. WHUS.org to listen live Wednesdays at 5 p.m. TalkNationRadio.org for transcripts, audio, and discussions. Our music is by Fritz Heed.